It has been so long. It's been a while, and I'm back, deciding to do a podcast on REM's 30th. As you are probably aware, or maybe if you're not and you're not an REM fan, REM's 30th birthday is coming up very soon, in less than a month. It's April 5th. So I figured let's get the festivities started early with some with like a good recollection of some of the earlier material. I figured this one, and I think I've done a podcast in the past regarding old music from their early days, and that's what this is going to be about. It's going to really go into to the beginning of their into 1980, actually. There's very few recordings from that era. In fact, from that year, there's only three that are known about. One was, I'm guessing, May 30th in 1980. At least that's been my calculation when the show took place. A second was June 6th at a place called Luxury Records in Atlanta. And this wasn't really an audience recording show, but rather what they would probably loosely call a set of demos, or basically they just all played. I dropped a coin. They all played their instruments in the record store, and they recorded it. But there wasn't really necessarily like a fans watching or anything like that. And the third was from October 4th, 1980. At a place called Tyrone's, which was also in Athens, Georgia, and they played a set there. Quality-wise, the last of the three of these shows is probably the best. However, the sound should be secondary to what is actually being done. What we're seeing is the creation of one of probably the kings of college rock, and that's REM. I'm going to play a track, and I don't even know which one yet, so I'm not going to tell you until after, and hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. I've got a charmer wherever I go. I don't use it to keep things open. More than a mojo, better than that. Makes me happy in no time flat. You might say I'm a chauvinist. There are some things I can't resist. I see a lady I want to meet. I use my charm, she's at my feet. I'm a woman. Keep coming up. Those crazy cats don't stop. I have to stroke them to the jet. I'm a mood maker, baby. So shake it.
You guys ought to get up and dance. It'll cool you off a little.
The following was a song called I've Got a Charm, or that's how we in the internet world and REM fan in our world have in REM fan internet world have labeled as such. I've Got a Charm. What makes this song rare is that this is the only known recording of the song. Again, the song was recorded less than 2 months from the band's inception. So we don't really know how long the song was actually played in the playlist. It's what I think it's pretty interesting of is that it's a song that's led on bass, then guitar. And if we remember REM's history, when the band met, it was Mike Mills and Bill Berry who had been established musicians. Bill Berry the drummer, Mike Mills the bassist. And Michael Stipe and Peter Buck, who were the other pair. Peter Buck was not an established guitarist. He was not really all that well versed in the instrument. And there was even questions as to whether or not he would be better suited for bass and they should switch. However, as we know, the ultimate decision was that they should just keep it as it was. And so this is... What I think is interesting about when you go back to the early, you know, like we listen to REM now and we listen to it then, even as you listen to some of these recordings and realize that this band has only really been performing maybe at this point 5 or 6 gigs, that while the sound is very, well, they're not like totally tight, they're pretty tight as a group. And they're having fun out there. And if you actually listen, and I'm going to at one point post the show, you hear a lot of comments from Michael about enjoying yourselves, you know, such and such. He's getting sort of the shtick as being a lead singer, almost as if he was a natural. But it... For what it is, and it's probably not what I would consider like the top echelon of their music, it's still a really good, you know, early song. The band is, of course, chosen to trash all these songs, or at least bury them into their into the REM grave, so to speak, and they'll probably never see the light of day. But at least you get this little peek into the snippet. The next song I'm going to play is another show, a song from that era, and it's actually a song that has been released. The song is called All the Right Friends. It ended up on the Vanilla Sky soundtrack. It's also ended up, I think there's been, it was played pretty regularly, at least for the first couple years, and then it was sort of dumped and rediscovered and dumped again, and so it sort of made its appearance a couple of years ago, and I think it's for what it is, it actually about 10, it's a couple of years, it's almost 10 years ago when it made its reappearance on the Vanilla Sky soundtrack. But here's a very early version of that.
Yeah.
I had been given the opportunity a couple of years ago to attend an event for the Athens Historical Society. They were having a viewing of some rare early REM videos from 1980 and 1981. For me, as being a bootleg collector, this was really a dream come true, because I had never seen, or not many people had ever seen, the videos that were being broadcast. In fact, you saw, you know, members of Michael Stipe's family there, which I thought was sort of like, this is pretty awesome. This is a real event. And although it wasn't like, although the event was like really viewed by a pretty nice size audience, it wasn't necessarily what I would consider like the diehard REM audience. Is that there were a lot of people actually who were part of the Athens Historical Society who were actually like, wow, this is, you know, this is that band they were talking about that's in town, that, you know, those goofy four, that goofy foursome. In that video, they actually claim that the couple of the songs that they performed, they had a video from the Wuxtry video, and they claim that they're the same as the versions that have been going around for years, which I'm going to play a couple of versions. My personal opinion is I'm not sure whether those claims are true or not, or whether or not this video is actually a separate recordings of the songs I'll be playing. But the recordings themselves, or I'm sorry, the videos themselves, what was so interesting and when I watched it, and I think it was actually a comment from someone who wasn't an REM fan and just coming in this like really blindly, was that here's Michael Stipe up there, and the first thing that this woman said, and she was a little older, said, you know what, this, he reminds me of Elvis. And you hear a lot, oh yeah, you know, like he does. And I think it was because they played Just a Touch, which I'm not going to play, but it, in Just a Touch is about Elvis, by the way. But what it really seemed to me was, and after talking to some people at that event, was, you know, Michael was a natural lead singer. He didn't, whether or not, whatever he's been shy, whether he's been not willing to talk to interviewees, or, you know, whether he wants to wear a towel on his head while playing and go blind, he always was a natural at what he was doing. It was just a matter of honing his craft, whether he was sharp or flat. He not only had his own thing going, but he had a lot of good teachers, whether they were Andy Kaufman, whether he was watching Morrissey, whether it was the Gang of Four or Patti Smith. I mean, everything that he was taking all this stuff in and watching them, and sort of came up with his own expression. So, you know, obviously you can argue that Michael Stipe, some of the stuff was borrowed, but the lyrics are real. His opinions are real. So I think he is a legitimate, you know, he is authentic. He's an authentic lead singer that in that time, in that place, was pretty, or I should say, at this time and at that place, people could say, this band could be something big. This next track is one that I think I like the best, because it's when I first got these, what people have been called, these rehearsals or demos, it was always the first track. And I always thought it was sort of, you know, it's a track that I've always remembered. So that song is called Dangerous Times. It is not a song that's been released. Again, it's just one of the early songs that REM, and you know, the REM canon, that's just been traded via bootleggers. Again, Dangerous Times.
Thank you.
Now, one of the arguments, or I should say, one of the issues I've had, or dilemmas that I've had over the past couple of weeks, because I wanted to post something, was discussing the idea of what REM was to Athens. Let's remember, if we go back 30 years, Athens, Georgia is becoming sort of a little, you know, a little scene. The B-52s had already been playing there, and they were pretty much, I believe, at this point when REM was starting, sort of getting on their way out. There were bands like Pylon that had come on the scene. There were bands like Love Tractor and the Method Actors. And so you all of a sudden you see all these, basically all these kids and playing music and doing this, what was considered dance music or Athens music. If you listen to any REM interviews or read anything, one of the things that they're always being asked in the early interviews, which you don't hear anymore about, is how they compared themselves with the music that was coming out of the city. And many times they would say, we really have nothing to do with it. I mean, we don't sound like those other bands. Those other bands don't sound like us. They're doing something different. And one of the things is, like, actually, I think you can hear some similarities in that, but I don't think it's a very strong correlation where you can say Athens musicians, there was like an Athens sound. And this is the thing I would love to hear other opinions about, because maybe I'm not the expert on Athens in 1980. I was only 8 years old. But the music that I have heard and the music that I've downloaded or listened to throughout the years is that they've had something else going on, and that Athens was not really about a sound, but more about an idea. Athens promoted, in my opinion, a healthy attitude to creating music. It was about collaboration. It was about supporting. It was about community. It was about basically college students that really had nothing better to do but to make music and to express themselves. And you had a lot of, you know, art students that thought, hey, let's put a band together, because that's the thing to do. I mean, what do you do in Athens? And so you start seeing, you know, the beginning, as I said, the beginning of this with the B-52s, but they moved out too quick. But you see this early on the career, and I think it's been something that's been very much overlooked in much of REM's career. Not the fact strictly about their music, but the idea that these people are not just making albums with themselves, but they're making albums with all kinds of other people. They're guesting on, you know, Peter Buck has a resume of music made with other that would stand, would, you know, span a telephone book. Michael Stipe has performed with Golden Smog. He's performed with Nina Cherry. The list goes on and on. So REM are not just about creating their own sound or in their own band, but they're about helping just about every other band that they can get their hands on. Whether it's, you know, providing some backing vocals, whether it's producing, whether it's providing an extra guitar, clapping, you know, cowbell, whatever it might be, they're creating this idea that music is about community. It is something that I wish I would love to hear what other people have to think about this, because I think it's something that's overlooked. And if you look back in 1980, it wasn't something that was very predominant in pop history. I mean, yes, you would see that, but not to this level. And you can argue that, you know, U2 doesn't have that level of collaboration. You can argue a lot of bands of REM's era don't. But if you look at bands now, you see that a lot of bands are doing that. It's becoming very much the thing. You know, a lot of people are, the communities, instead of becoming geographic, though, it's becoming much more global. And so you'll see a lot of tracks featuring, you know, an artist or something like that on a track or two. I just listened to the new Gorillaz album, and it's featuring all kinds of different artists on it. So I'm just wondering whether or not Athens is sort of one of the many birthplaces for that. Again, I would love to hear people's thoughts. Okay, on to the next track. I'm going to play another song from this little demo slash garage slash rehearsal tape called Baby Eye, and then I'll have some thoughts about that. Now, if there's one thing that if you've been listening to this and your REM knowledge isn't maybe you're just a casual fan, let's say, and you're listening to this and, I was just talking about the whole Athens, is there an Athens sound? And you listen to a song like this, and this song is pretty self-explanatory in terms of its structure. It's that it sounds sort of like a mix between a Buddy Holly meets a punk band of the 70s. There isn't all that much quote-unquote artsy about it. It doesn't play itself off as a dance track, although you could dance to it, but it's not not like 80s dance or Athens dance. So you have this like thing going on. It's like, again, REM is in the process of creating a sound, and in their infancy, that this is sounds like your typical garage band. I mean, they're playing songs about love, ex-girlfriends and along that lines. And it isn't until maybe a little bit later where we start seeing more structure craft into some of the songs that make it onto their first albums. Let's actually make a jump into October of 1980 and actually go through that. I mean, they played again a show at Tyrone's, and by this time between June and October we see a jump in what we're hearing. They still have some of that, again, that this garage sound, but some of the more familiar tracks that people are aware of start getting introduced into these set lists. One of them is a song called Don't Go Back to Rockville that was written by Mike Mills. And this version is much faster, much more quote-unquote punk sounding than the one that ends up on Reckoning in 1984. Let's play that for you right now. Yeah.
looking at your watch a third time, waiting in the station for the bus. Go into a place that's far, so far away, and if that's not enough, go where nobody says hello, they don't talk to anybody they don't know. Paul, Pete says hi. Why come to an empty house, sit around all by yourself? I know that might sound sane, but I believe you'll be coming back before too long. Don't go back to Rockville.
So, there we go with Rockville, and this song, of course, is probably one of the more popular tracks in the R.E.M. canon, but again, it's a little faster. R.E.M. is still, like, really, you know, sort of, I want to say youthful, in the way that they present some of their songs, though, and even in back at this time, there was still a lot of cover versions in their songs, and I'm sorry, in their sets. They're not just doing songs that they have created, but songs that had influenced them. One of those bands that I think is pretty, you know, obvious is the Velvet Underground. But if you listen to this version, this is much different than the version that turns up on Dead Letter Office, which is maybe a little bit more of the PG version. This one really gets out there. There She Goes Again, R.E.M.
Ha! There she goes again. She's out.
walking down the street. But all your friends is gonna meet. Better hit her. It's gotta be. Ha! You better hit her. Yeah.
I mentioned earlier about Elvis, and I figured as long as we're mentioning Elvis that we should actually play the song that is about Elvis. The song is about the song is called Just a Touch. It ended up on Life's Rich Pageant. For years it was played in the live sets, but never made it onto an album. I think probably the closest one it got very, I should say, the one that got very close to making was Reckoning, I think, in terms of the songs that were on that album. But it essentially disappeared for a couple of years and then reappeared in an era, or I should say a time, when Michael Stipe was having problems basically coming up with new songs. So they had actually gone back to some of the earlier tracks and demoed those, and this particular song was re-released, or I should say released. If you listen to the lyrics, it's about again Michael and his Michael, someone's trying to Facebook post me or something, so it's becoming a pain, so I shouldn't have this open. The song is about Elvis Presley, and now they shut that window. The song is about Elvis Presley, and basically after he died, and it's sort of a tribute to him, in I think typical Elvis fashion. The song again is Just a Touch.
Don't you remember, son is fine, day in the life, nobody liar, we're gonna dead, law and a life. Kevin heard it on the radio, you and Bob heard about Colorado in the news, caught it all just time. Set the pace. What was to come? We'll have to care. Not to go. Kevin heard it on the radio. You and Bob heard around. Colorado out on the news. Caught it all just tap.
stance was so naive. Too much time and sun. When they do it all, you set the pace, ha, but what's to come? We'll have to care. Oh, now that you're gone, Kevin heard it on the radio. You and Farhood are out, Colorado, yeah, I'm not needing you. Caught it all just.
This is the song, this next song is actually the first song that Michael has attributed the first time he felt that he created a great song. And the song's title is Gardening at Night. And I think what's different about some, if you've listened to some of the songs that we've listened to in this hour, is that a lot of it's, again, it's about simple teenage crap, like, you know, girlfriends and breaking up with people, and I could play probably a ton more. But in terms of our Michael really creating this mystique, this aura around him, this is the first song that really does it, because we're talking about essentially, I guess in plain fashion, it's about, you know, he's talking about a guy who gardened at night. But I think there's always something a little bit more mysterious about it, especially as the song makes it from the live venue to Chronic Town, making it, in my opinion, one of the better EPs that has ever been released. Probably, I mean, it's hard to pick a standout track from that album, but I believe that this is probably one of them. I mean, you could argue probably, well, you know, this or Wolves Lore or Carnival sorts of all being songs that from a fan standpoint have really been appreciated. You see all of a sudden that as you add these tracks that this is a very strong EP. But I think Michael, you know, he proves himself a lyricist on this song. And so that's why I'm gonna play it here, Gardening at Night, REM.
Always been that far. saw your eye roll in the night. They said it couldn't be alright. I see your money on the floor. I felt the pocket change so hard. Feelings that broke through the door. Just that I had to face to live. The art is nothing but a fifth. The sign just hurts my ass at work. It must be time for penitence.
Why should we argue the case, for example, that REM is one of the best bands of our time? I mean, let's throw away, you know, the last, even let's just throw away the last 20 years. I mean, we could just take all that music and, you know, pretend it wasn't made. And you could still make the case that REM is one of the best bands of rock and roll. And I think there's several reasons why you can make that case. Number one, they were one of the first bands that really bridged the gap between punk and the, you know, they were able to take, bridge it in such a manner where some of the music from that era, which got popular, i.e. the Duran Durans, the Culture Clubs, is in many cases forgotten. I mean, I'm sorry, we love Duran Duran, but I don't think that they're a classic band per se on the level of REM. But REM took some of the messages from the punk movement and sort of did it their own way. They always admired their teachers. I mean, and that I think was something that while it doesn't make them the best band in the world, I think what they did was they learned well, and they knew how to make a good rock and roll record. They were great promoters of themselves. I mean, they knew what their strengths and what their weaknesses were. They didn't bridge the gap, for example, to putting lyrics in the album, when part of the reason that REM became so successful in those early years was the idea that we didn't really know what he was saying, and we had to sort of like make it our own interpretation, which I think in many respects is what art is about. It's not necessarily the interpretation of the lead singer, but the interpretation of the listener. I can look at a picture in an art gallery and I say, well, this is my feelings about looking at this, whether it's happy, sad, or whatever. REM was sort of not just putting it all out there and telling us what the songs were about. They were letting us choose that for ourselves. And I think that's a very important lesson. And I think what they did was they created music that people could listen to over and over again. I mean, you didn't sit and buy an REM record and say, well, this is really catchy and this is, you know, I'm going to listen to this, you know, a million times. You might have said, oh, this is pretty good. There might have been one or two songs, but all of a sudden, you're realizing that the rest of the songs, as you're playing over and over and over again, become part of the canon that becomes you. I mean, Murmur, you could argue, is as much as the first time I listened to Murmur, the song that stood out to me was Radio for Europe. After that, it's a blur. A blur in terms of what I actually said, what was my next favorite song or what song came after that. All of a sudden what I'm realizing is all these songs are very catchy. There's something involved there that, you know, being a 16-year-old, I really wasn't sure what the hell this guy was talking about. And instead of pushing me away, it was bringing me closer in. Because I think a lot of times artists and musicians, it's all sort of expressed in front of you, clear as day. This is what we're talking about, and I'm not sure I always want that when I'm listening to music. But lastly, I think it's a collaboration between four people who had unique abilities to create a sound that was, in my opinion, very spectacular. You could take each one of those pieces and you know, there's been a lot of arguments in the last 12 years about whether the departure of Bill Berry has meant something. And in my opinion, it has, because all of a sudden, R.E.M. was four pieces. It had this drummer that didn't drum like anybody else, a guitarist that really didn't play guitar like anybody else, a lead singer that didn't pronounce his words, and a bassist who really kept everything together, plus had really amazing backing vocals. And so you put these four pieces together and you realize how they work. They work as a democracy. They split the profits evenly. They all of a sudden become part of a larger progressive movement. I mean, you could say, yes, the politics does mean something. They are trying to create a different atmosphere in the rock community. The music has to matter, and it does. But there is always been something larger with them. And I think that's why people like myself waste so much time 52 minutes into a blog, you know, I'm sorry, a podcast talking about them. And, you know, so as I end up with a couple songs here, we'll just play a couple, you know, songs to end this podcast. I want to wish them a happy 30th, and we're going to probably do some more things, maybe some more posts and post some more music. But as we celebrate it, I hope people are listening to this and enjoying this hour. So I'm going to go, and we're going to just play a couple random tracks. I'm thinking a couple, we'll play a couple more. Let's see. We'll play a couple more originals, and then maybe we'll end up with a couple covers. So, all right, take care.
Steve, Scott, say you make her feel all right. Kathleen, he says she wants you, but not tonight. Louise, you know the girl. Telling lies. You touch the magic in her eyes. When you're not there, other guys come sticking around. When you ask her what's going on, she'll push you around. Say you don't want to talk about it. She'll tell you stories you can tell. You know the girl. Telling lies. You touch the magic in her eyes. But when you're not there, other guys are constantly around. When you ask her what's going on, she'll like put you around. But you need that. Say what you want, but she said, here it's up. And you don't mind at all. When she goes, you pay the price. You're bound to burn. And on the line, don't matter at all. You say you don't want to talk about it. So tell your story. You can die. You know the girl. Just tell it.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Cindy. Hi, Troy. Gotta get away, gotta get away, gotta get away, gotta.
I'm on a permanent vacation, nothing left to lose.
I want a revelation, nothing left to prove. I can take it with me, leave you all alive. Got some kind of feeling running up my mind. Sleep late in the morning, stay out all night long. Every day like the one before, I'm going wrong. I'm on a permanent vacation, nothing left to lose. I want a revelation, nothing left to prove. I can take it with me, leave you all tonight. Got some kind of feeling, playing my mind. There's only one thing you can do, it's I've got to do. I'm a hustler, I got nothing to win, nothing to lose, nothing to prove. I need to do. Woo! 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 Woo!
Well, I'm on a vacation.
This one's for Sigma Alpha Epsilon.
I'm not just jumping through.
First time I met you, girl, you didn't have any shoes. Now you're walking around like a face, dude. You have a Cadillac, the friends you choose. You won't catch me in your book of his, cause
I'm not just stepping down.
I'm not just stepping down. You're trying to make your mark in society. You're using all the tricks that you put on me. You read all those high fashion magazines. The clothes you're wearing, go and make them public shame.
I'm not just stepping down.
I'm not just stepping down. I'm not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone.
Not your stepping stone.
First I met you, girl, you didn't have it. Now you're walking around like from pages. You may have a camel about the fringe you choose. You won't catch me in your book of
I'm not your stepping down. I'm not your stepping down.
I'm not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone. Not your stepping stone.